Today is October 4th, 1974, a Friday. The following interview is with J. Fred Buzhart, B-U-Z-H-A-R-D-T. Mr. Buzhart's title is Counsel to the President. The interview will take place in Mr. Buzhart's EOB office, room 106. Jack Nesbitt and Terry Good will conduct the interview.
Dear, what's in St. Clair's files?
I might add that we will transcribe this at some point, send you a transcription, and you can modify it or add to it or whatever is necessary at the time. I scribbled down several dates before coming down here just to make sure that I've got at least the beginning and ending dates or the significant dates. According to one thing I read, you came over here on May 10th of 1973 as special counsel. Then became counsel on January 4th of 74.
That's correct.
And you had your heart attack on June 13th of 74. Mm-hmm. And those are the three significant dates that I thought we could work around.
All right.
I'll defer to you on how to approach this topic.
All right. Why don't I try to give you an outline of how the legal work was carried on.
All right.
When I arrived on May the 10th, I was detailed from the Department of Defense, where I was general counsel, and I was detailed as special counsel to the president. Donald Garment was acting special counsel. And when I came, he became acting counsel. Counsel's office was very small at that time, as was in, there was practically no one in the special counsel's office. We had Douglas Parker, who stayed with me as, and assisted me as special counsel. I was given primary responsibility for matters relating to the Watergate investigation. At that time, it was primarily Senate Watergate Committee investigation. The special prosecutor was, I guess, had been appointed, but he hadn't actually gone to work. We secured the services of Charles Allen Wright sometime in the first part of June. On a consultant basis, and he remained active with the office until around the 1st of November and continued to consult even throughout the rest of Mr. Nixon's term of office. Between the period of May the 10th and sometime in the middle part of October, the principal people working on Mr. Nixon's Watergate-related matters were these four people primarily. We brought in June four young attorneys from the Department of Justice. They were detailed here. George Williams, Greg Haynes,
Paul Tribble.
Paul Tribble and,
Richard Hauser.
And Richard Hauser, Dick Hauser. I guess Paul Tribble was the first one to go back. He came to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alexandria. And he went back, I believe, around the, in the early fall. Haynes stayed on until early in January. In October, we obtained the services of Sam Powers from Miami, who came in for the tape hearings and worked through the first part of October till he caught pneumonia with us, participated in the hearings. And the three of us, during the period that before Sam Powers came with us, it was primarily a shared responsibility for most of the work between Wright, Garmin, myself, and with a large assist from Doug Parker. Parker left us, I believe, in January, and in December, James St. Clair was retained in the latter part of December. When he first came aboard, this was when the impeachment inquiry began in the House Judiciary Committee. At that time, the understanding was that he was to have primary responsibility for the Judiciary Committee hearings and would also work directly with the special prosecutor. In November, I believe it was, we increased the staff about 10 people. That recruiting was done by Jeff Shepherd out of the domestic counsel staff with the assistance of Judge Sullivan. Oh, I forgot one man. When Charles Wright came on, we also brought on another consultant from a Houston firm. For the life of me at the moment, I can't remember the name.
I went through some newspapers.
Let me ask Nancy, all right, if she knows.
I had his name down, but it was just a name to me.
Tom did a large part of the legal research and original drafting on pleadings under the direction of Charles Wright. And then Charles Allen Wright became took primary responsibility for the briefs, although we all worked on Also with us from a period of June through the end of the public Watergate hearings was Bob Andrews, who came over on detail from the Department of Defense. And he had the responsibility, primary responsibility of keeping up with the record of the Watergate hearings in the, by the Senate Select Committee. Why don't you ask some questions now?
You mentioned that you and Leonard Garment, Charles Allen Wright, shared the responsibility of the whole Watergate matter for this period of time with the large assistance from Doug Parker. I'm not a lawyer, so I wouldn't really understand what type of responsibilities you might share. Would this mean in the research, in dealing with the Senate committee, actually being present, testifying?
No, none of us testified in the Senate Watergate hearings. There were a number of legal problems, both in dealing with the committee, and then the committee brought an action in court. Which required responsive pleadings, arguments, briefs, in the litigation with the committee. We also had litigation with the special prosecutor over a grand jury subpoena, which was heard in the district court and went to the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, as did the Senate suit. The Senate suit went to the Court of Appeals twice and through the district court twice. It was heard first by Judge Sirica, subsequently was heard in the second go-around by Judge Gazelle before it went back to the Court of Appeals. The second round of litigation with the special prosecutor began in the spring of 74. And that litigation centered around a trial subpoena. And that one went to the district court and then directly to the Supreme Court.
Would you three gentlemen have gone your separate ways in handling the various responsibilities, or would it have been a group effort where you would have sat down and brainstormed?
It was largely a group effort. Now, we did sit down and brainstorm.
Were you the more or less acknowledged leader of the team effort?
Yes, because I was assigned the primary responsibility until Jim St. Clair came aboard. After that, he had the primary responsibility.
Just reading back through the newspaper clippings on the entire span of your activities, you were more in the public eye during that period up to, I guess, the end of December or January of 74. Then you were not seen as frequently in the public, but based on some of the sources that evidently the newspaper people were getting to, you were taking an extremely active part back here in preparation and overseeing things back here. Now, again, pardon my inability to articulate this. Perhaps you might be able to clarify that a little more and put it in your own words, or correct me if my assumption is way off base.
No, well, as I said, I had the primary responsibility.
Now, during that period, 74,
During the period of 74, Jim St. Clair had the primary responsibility because he became the special counsel, and I moved down and became counsel and took on the responsibilities of the, I guess you'd call it the routine work of the counsel's office. And the more directly related matter, he, together with the larger staff that had been added, took on the primary responsibility. Although we still worked very closely together on all of it, and it was pretty much the same type of arrangement. But he had the lead role.
Was Leonard Garment still playing a significant role in this period from January on?
No. Although in many instances he was helpful and continued to advise, he no longer played a primary role. He was assigned to other responsibilities.
Charles Allen Wright also had a decreasing involvement.
A decreasing involvement, and for the most part he consulted only on the legal briefs during that period.
The other members of the staff, were they primarily researchers and drafters?
Yes.
I gather that's a typical legal operation, isn't it?
That's
correct.
There
are one or two primaries, and then the rest of the support staff prepares the research, or does the research, prepares the drafts, and
that's
the guidance
correct.
And instructions.
They were assigned primary responsibilities in a number in specified areas or for specified matters. But they all participated on whatever problem was in the forefront.
Would the documentation reflect their specific assignments?
Yes, their specific assignments. It would not. It would probably not well document their actual work. There were some who had more generalized responsibility. After Marinus left, Mike Sterlocki and Jerry Murphy shared the primary responsibility for brief drafting, legal brief drafting. Some of the others worked on fact brief. Mike Howard was as near as there was to an office manager for the an administrative director of the research effort.
Following your heart attack, how long a period were you not involved? How long did it take you to recuperate and then get back on the job?
Well, for the first 3 weeks after the hospital, after the heart attack, I was in the hospital. And except for, the first week, I guess I talked rarely to anyone here. The second week, I guess I had a couple of conversations. The third week, I guess I conferred by telephone almost every day. After I got out of the hospital and went home, I was confined to the house. for about 3 weeks. I usually talk daily with Jim St. Clair and the other lawyers on the staff, General Haig, and occasionally with the president. But
did anyone?
It was not, you know, it was not a high pressure type of consultation. And then I guess on the, well, it's hard to remember the dates now.
I was just trying to get a feel for the duration of your recuperation.
It was about 6 weeks, and I came back, the first week I was back, I came back at least by directions for a half day only. I was still in the half week basis, I think, when the Supreme Court decision came down. That, from that point on until August the 9th, I was very much back on a full-time basis in the case.
So for a period of 3 weeks, you were in the hospital and pretty much uninvolved. And then for the next 3 weeks when you were confined at home, a gradual re-involvement. Were your responsibilities assumed by any one particular individual during this period of time when you were in the hospital?
No, by a number of people. By Dick Houser, on some of them, and Skip Williams. Jeff Shepard came down from the domestic staff and helped out quite considerably. Yeah?
He's here.
Oh, all right. We'll be through in just a minute.
The newspaper accounts of your activities often have pictured you as the tape man. Would you care to?
Yeah, I'll give you a quick rundown on how that came to be. I listened to one tape, the telephone conversation, in June 1973. It's been explored in the record quite thoroughly. Was a telephone tape. I didn't listen to any other original tape until probably December. But when the court, when the president decided to comply with the Court of Appeals decision, the court at that time specified that the tapes would be reviewed and an index and analysis of the subpoenaed tapes prepared. We worked from copies made by at the direction of the court. And Sam Powers and I undertook that work. Before we completed it, Sam caught pneumonia and had to go to the hospital here, and when they let him out, he went to the hospital in Miami. And he had a rather persistent bout with it. So I had to complete it myself. With Sam out of the action, the primary responsibility for reviewing these tapes fell on me, as we tried to meet the other requirements of the special prosecutor over and above the ones that were covered by the subpoena. Locating specific conversations on a 6-hour reel of tape that's not indexed by recognition of voices in order to identify the speakers. It becomes something that you can do better with experience. You get the knack of it. And that's primarily why I was carrying the lead role in locating tapes. It was not a matter of limited access, but rather a matter of who would spend the time to do a task. And the experience I got early on made me the prime candidate. So I did. I continued to do most of the location, but increasingly tried to teach other people to do it. And in the last go-around, the last batch of tapes produced, I only helped in cases where they really had trouble. Jim St. Clair had access to any tape I had access to.
The public accounts of your daily routine and the number of hours that you spent would lead one to believe that certainly before your heart attack you were working a 14 to 16 hour day, and I would gather from what you said that after you got back into the swing of things following your heart attack, you must have been back on a similar schedule. Would that be correct?
No, it was probably more than 14 to 16 hours before I had the heart attack, but somewhat less afterwards. I tried to keep it down to not over 12 hours.
Are the documents fairly complete in terms of your activities, your assignments, your responsibilities, your inputs into the effort?
No, probably not. The documents will probably not disclose the relative roles of participation. For the simple reason there was such a crash throughout this that we did not, there was just no effort made to document as we went along. There's no time for it. Or of anybody's role in it.
Are there any significant areas that you did not play a role in?
Well, anything that was done while I was in the hospital, obviously I didn't participate in. Otherwise, I did.
You would have had some input, or at least it would have crossed your desk on an FYI basis.
Well, I don't think anything would have gone out that I wasn't consulted on more than an FYI basis.
It's not that I doubt these things, but it's just to get this for the record so that we are sure. Right. It's like asking if the wheel is round.
Yeah. Good, Terry. I'm going to have to break.
I know you've got an appointment.
If you want some more, if you think it's worth it, you can come back this afternoon.
Well, this touches upon the things I wanted to talk about.
Right.
I thank you very much for
Good.
That.